All right, welcome everyone to APS Radio episode 35. My name is Jim Bernica, and today I met with my old pal, Allison Feening from Pinpoint Behavioral.
Hey,
good
Jim.
afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
Kind of already talked over each other.
It tends to happen.
It happens. Yeah, so I was able to spend a whole weekend with her at the First Responder Bridge. Amazing program for you. For those of you that are not familiar with that, it's a great place for first responders and their spouses to just really learn about the job and what the job does to those first responders. And you were a part of that. You had your own little segment, a little panel discussion, and I was just there as a peer, which was kind of full circle for me since, I went there as an attendee last year.
Yeah, it's been an honor to volunteer for them for the last about year and a half. And so I help run the clinical team and oversight anyone that may be dealing with some stressors or triggers or different situations that come over the weekend. And so it's always a great time and great to see familiar faces like yours.
No, yeah. Really, you were looking forward to seeing
familiar
this ugly
face.
mug.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we were together every week for like a year. So
this is true, because that, and that's what we're going to talk about today is you and I were really tag team partners, and we worked together really well throughout my department. And before we really dive into that, I think it's important to kind of give a background of how that whole thing came about. So this episode today that we're talking about is, you know, a checkup from your neck up, just annual clinician visits, actually bringing the clinician into the fire department, which is what we were able to do with you. So to kind of like take a step back and talk about how we got there, in 2019, Dayton had a mass shooting in which 9 people were killed in our bar entertainment district.
Mm-hmm.
And Marathon Oil actually gave the police and the fire union each $25,000 to use towards firefighter health and wellness. And so I was at that point in time, I'm a member of the union. I can't remember if I was health and safety or trustee at that point, but that doesn't matter. But, you know, I really pitched this idea, and it wasn't my idea. I didn't come up with this whole clinician visit. I don't know where I got it from, but the idea, needless to say, was let's bring a clinician in, let's bring them to the firehouses, let's introduce them to the clinicians. And, you know, if they want to talk, cool. If nothing else, the idea was they would be able to at least know you, have a familiar face. And if anything happens down the road, they would be able to reach out and be that much easier. That was kind of the whole mindset behind it. So we were working.
I think not to toot my own horn, but I think I gave you the idea because we've been doing it with departments since 2018. So
maybe if you want to take credit, I'll let you. I don't really remember. My memory is crap.
But it happened, and you and Dayton Fire and the local. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No. How dare you? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know, we had several different clinicians and that were working with our peer team at that point. And we basically did an application, and the board looked at everything, and we ended up going with you. And so the idea was, again, we're going to go to all the firehouses and we're going to meet everybody. But before we even did that, I thought it was important. And this whole thing, I thought, worked out really well. And I can't say that it was purposeful, but it worked out this way. We were able to bring in Joe Terry as a speaker, and she did an amazing job. Probably, I mean, the best I think anybody could have possibly done to really break down the stigma of behavior health. My department is certainly not small, and in order to get everybody through her training, I still feel bad to it to this day. I put her through 12 trainings in 3 days, and it was way too much for her, but it was the only way to make sure everybody had an opportunity to see that class.
And I think it was brilliant in how it all laid out, like you said, where it was the end of December And then we just rolled and launched right into the wellness program, the neck up checkups.
That's right. And so you were there for the trainings as well. So not only did Joe do her thing,
All 16 of them,
12 of them.
or
Come
12 of
on.
them.
Come
I don't
on.
know. I've seen a lot of them, so.
Yes. So, yeah. So you were part of that too. So it was like Joe really broke down the stereotypes and broke down the stigma about behavioral health. And I think for the first time, my firefighters were there going, oh man. This job really has affected me. It was kind of like a light bulb went off with them. And along with that, as soon as Joe was done, we tagged you in and we basically said, hey, this is Allison. We're going to be bringing around to the stations. And it was a great just introduction. Like you said, it just rolled perfectly because we started like the very next week with our first station visits. You know, and I
Yeah.
think another thing of value was we were coming to the department, but it was a union program. And I don't know how it is everywhere else, but where I'm at, there is a certain level of trust that's involved with the union compared to management. So when it's something from management, a lot of times, and you can step in on this because you're working with a lot of departments now with management, but with management, a lot of times it's just the lack of trust. You know, they feel like if they say something, it might get back to them and they may get in trouble or whatever else. But with the union side of things, I think we really had that trust from the start. Do you
Yeah,
agree?
I agree. We had trust straight from the start. And yeah, over my time now and a lot of departments we work with, the biggest, and we'll talk about this later, but the number one stressor is admin and organizational. And unfortunately, the disconnection that occurs somewhat naturally between leadership and line people help kind of increases that segregation and unfortunately decreases the connection, which then decreases trust and all that.
So I remember when we started, I kind of had a hypothesis, and I really felt that not a whole lot of people would take you up on this opportunity and talk to you. I felt like maybe a few per station, per crew would, but ultimately people wouldn't want to be in there for any length of time because the thought would be that, you know, all the other members of the crew are going, oh, something really must be going on with Bob. You know, he's been in there for a while. And I think it's important to note too, but when we did this, we took the crews out of service. So it wasn't a bad thing. They actually enjoyed that they had a little bit of time to relax and not take any runs because every crew is busy where I'm at. So that was my hypothesis. And again, the hope was if nothing else, they saw you gave them a business card, and if anything happened later on, they call you. Or if they didn't want to talk to you right then and there, maybe as soon as you leave, they'd give you a call or the next day. That was my hope. And
Yeah.
more than anything, I wanted to just introduce you to everybody.
Yeah, I
That
think the way that, you know, and we'll get through some of the changes and the barriers we experience, but every time I was at a station, you were my point of contact that was with me, introducing me, making them feel like, hey, this is somebody we can trust. You made it very, you know, casual and it wasn't stiff. Also, sometimes bringing donuts was helpful. And then, like you said, just they were mandated to say hi. Well, they're supposed to, but they didn't have to talk, right? So they don't have to come sit down and tell me everything going on, but they were highly recommended to at least see me. But at the end of the day, I'm never going to force anyone who doesn't want to talk.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the numbers later and what we found out.
Yes. So like you said, I went along with you, and it was a basically we had you and I basically had a usually a Friday date every week, in which we went crew to crew, station to station. Each the way we did it, it was very easy for us. Dayton has 12 stations. There's 12 months in a year. Yeah, I mean, it made sense.
What?
I know. It was
what?
Brilliant. I maxed out right there. Like, that was as good as it gets for me.
And then on weeks where we had either a station with only a few folks, we would either pick up headquarters, go to the training center, you know, we'd find time. And there were some weeks where I think I did more than one day every once in a while. But yeah, every Friday, because my husband's Kelly Day, so I guaranteed I had childcare. And yeah, you and I would just go at it, and we would be there as long as we needed to be. And the glorious thing too about having the point of contact from the clinician side is you knew, hey, there's some things that have happened. Let's go over here and chat with this unit, with this platoon. So that was really helpful. So I wasn't looking for the ISU to call me on a crisis. Like, you already kind of knew, hey, they had a bad call or this person's struggling. And it was so confidential that no one knew why we were there. And sometimes we just slip in the side door, chat with somebody and leave.
Yep.
It was really awesome to have you doing that.
Having a finger on a pulse and knowing what was going on definitely made it easy. And we, even though we had a plan, we actually had a bulletin where it listed out all the times we were going to be there. It wasn't that big of a deal to have a detour. Like, and I had the ability to do that, you know. It was flexible, you know. And you know, again, I remember the first time we did this, I didn't know how it was going to go. And I mean, everybody, that even that first day, everybody sat down and talked to you. And I just remember just feeling just great inside. Like, if this is how it's going to go, this is going to be tremendous. Because I also know, and this is the same way, I mean, wherever you go, you met with that first crew. They actually used you. They sat down with you, talked to you. It was a good experience. And guess what? They're going to tell that crew the next morning, and so on and so forth. So it wasn't very long before everybody really knew what we were doing, and they knew that it was actually a good experience, and that you were really easy to talk to. It was very casual. And it was, again, it was done the right way. It was confidential. Nothing was going to management. It's a union led program. And, just from the start, things I thought really went well.
Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, there's a special guest appearance. Who's that?
Sorry. Yeah. I may have to grab them. So yeah, everyone, this is, my special guest. He is over here, blabbering up a storm, Tucker. Tucker, meet everyone.
What's up, Tucker? Hi.
What's up, Tucker? Tucker is 6 months old today.
So. He's already got more hair than me.
I think everyone has more hair than you.
All right. So, you know, we went around, we went station to station, crew to crew. We did this for a while. And I know you were taking some analytics when we were doing this, because it's important to show the numbers, because you want to, you know, the idea was to continue and do this and on and on. And the marathon money that we had, that's one time money. So the idea was, or I guess the hope was, that we could prove the value in this program and either the union or the department actually pick it up and pay for it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the goal. So we had to have numbers, but we also had to make sure everything was confidential as well. Will you kind of talk about some of the numbers and data that you were picking up?
Yeah. So from the clinician side, all besides writing somebody's name down, I didn't collect any additional information. You know, I didn't write down what people said, and it didn't go anywhere but with me. But I did every quarter provide some data pertaining to three specific areas. The first area was, had they ever talked to a clinician before? The second area was, did we give any referrals or resources to somebody? You know, it could have been a referral about their kid or their mom or themselves or ADHD testing or financial support. It could have been for anything, but you know, on the report, we don't indicate what the referrals were, just how many we gave. And then the last piece was, what was the main stressor? Which is quite interesting when we get to the data. So over a whole year, you know, we went to each department, each platoon, you know, once a month, we went to each station, which covered about almost half of the department, which our goal was half 1 year, half another year, which if we repped it up to more than once a week, we would have been able to do everyone, but just the way it all happened. And so out of everyone we saw in that year, the amount of people that were offered to see me, 92% engaged in a wellness check voluntarily, 92%. So total was, I think, 15 people. Only 15 people did not want to talk to me.
Let's touch on that real quick.
And that's before, okay, right?
Before we go any further, like, because I think it's, we talked about this before. We know, like, what happened. I was. You want to go ahead? You want to take it?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, I mean, I'll give my side. So, since I probably should be the one talking about. Something happened on the admin side with Dayton in the summer of 2022 when we were doing our checks, which changed who my point of contact was going to be. When that point of contact changed, so again, my point of contact goes with me to the station. They introduce who I am, make it feel really, really comfortable, really confidential, private. So when that point of contact changes, when I saw people start declining to be seen by me. And you can give the rest of it if you want.
Yeah, you said it very politically correct. I basically got kicked out of that position, and I had my own issues and went away to Center of Excellence and all that kind of stuff. But the program went on. But the reality of it was, when you and I were together, I think I had the trust of the members.
Yeah.
And very, very few people. I mean, it was maybe what,
we
four
got
or five
traction.
People.
Yeah. Like, and we had traction going to where we were being utilized often, which on your end burnt you out.
It did. It did.
It's a lot.
But when I left, they put somebody in there that did not have that trust. And I think the program kind of suffered because of that. So I guess the point being made of all that is, it's very important to make sure you have somebody that does have the trust and respect that's going to go around with the clinician and introduce things. Because if you don't have that person, if it's somebody they just don't trust, like, they're not going to participate.
Correct. And I'm seeing that in other places too.
Good.
Yeah. Good. As well as, I mean, this, once the gate opens, you will get people wanting support and help. And so it is a lot. And on your defense, it's a lot on a wellness coordinator or the point of contact, whatever you want to call yourself. And so making sure you have your support, you have what you need. Because I don't know about, remember, if you remember this, the amount of calls we would get all hours of the night and on the weekends, there was, you know, trauma and crisis don't have days off.
That's right.
And for us, I mean, Christmas Eve, I think we were working with somebody, right? I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter.
It was like once we started, like, the machine just started rolling, and it was almost in a weird way, like, what did we create? Because it was the need was finally there. Like, people, and it was great that people were finally actually picking up the phone. People were finally admitting that they were having issues. That is amazing. But at the same time, it was a lot for you and a lot for me. Like, it's just, it wasn't, it, we needed more of us.
Because in a 2-year period prior to this, I think it was 2 years, y'all had the shootings. You had a fellow officer die by suicide. You had the tornadoes and some really wretched car accidents that were pretty nasty. Some pediatric deaths, some child abuse cases that were all over the news. Like, there was some nasty things that the members experienced.
And a lot of them just stuffed that down and held it. And they, when they finally unloaded, it was on
They
you.
unloaded. Yeah.
It was on you. You know, I could, you would come in sometimes and I would just know that you went through some stuff. Like, there, you heard some stuff that was probably had been
Up.
waiting to come out for a long time.
Well, better out than in.
That's true. That's true.
That's what Shrek says, right?
Yes. So what were some of those other, you know, I kind of jumped in there when we were talking about the numbers and data again. What kind of finish up there, please?
Yeah, so 15 people did not want to talk to me, and that's totally fine. Again, if they are absolutely refusing, I'm never going to force somebody to talk. That's the worst thing you want. We gave 50 through 53 referrals, so I forget the percentage of that, but we gave a lot of referrals out either to us, to other practices, and we don't segregate. You don't just have to come to us. Again, and it could have been for anything. But the main areas in almost all the whole quarter, the whole year, so we separated by quarter, and almost all 4 quarters, almost the number one issue was workplace problems. Second being trauma, and third being family or marriages. And it's interesting to me because we work with an organization out of Colorado called National Emergency Responder and Public Safety Center. And before we had even gotten connected with them, we're starting to see the trend that admin and organizational stress is the number one stressors for public safety. And after we started training with them, and now they're bought by Corpco, but after we started training with them, they confirmed that is the case. The number one stress for public safety is administration and organizational stress. And everywhere we go where I teach, I mean, now at this point, I don't even know how many departments. That, yeah, everyone agrees. The job can suck. The calls can really suck. But if you don't have support coming back to the station, if you don't have somebody you can talk to, we know the number one way to prevent PTSD is post-trauma perceived support. If you don't have that and you feel like your boss is a, excuse my French, a dick or not going to listen to you, then people will be miserable. And they'll say, well, it's leadership, it's this, it's that. Yeah, we need to get back to the table, everyone. And what I mean is the kitchen table.
Good deal. Now, since you, here's the other, how many, do you remember how many people you ended up actually seeing, and how many of those it was their first time ever seeing a clinician?
Yes. So we saw 188. So your department had around 325, so we saw 188, which was 58% of membership total. And of those, we saw 92%. And the first time that ever saw a therapist was just about 50%, so half of them is 47 to be exact. 47% of the individuals had never talked to a therapist. Which, to be honest, I thought that number would have been higher. So I
Yes.
was pleasantly surprised that people had either, yeah, I've talked to a therapist when I was a kid, or I've done marriage counseling, or yeah, I see somebody currently. Awesome. Like, that's great. So they were already open to it. But to be able to hit, and again, we've only hit half of them. So to know that half of the half has never talked to a therapist, we were able to open the gateway to communication and to destigmatizing therapy.
Do you remember there being like any stories of just horrific experiences talking to clinicians?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I've had people tell me about therapists that they would sit and therapists would talk the whole time. I met with a therapist, but they talked about themselves the whole time, which is not a good sign. Or they just didn't get it. That's a lot of what I hear, that they just didn't understand. They don't get what I do. And not
Yeah.
that that's horrific, but I mean, that's going to deter a lot of people from seeing a therapist.
But that's, and I guess I was kind of setting you up for my next big point, which was when you, if you're going to bring in a clinician into your department, you have to make sure that clinician actually gets us, gets our job, what we do, how we do things, and they're relatable, and
Yeah.
that they're cool to be with. I feel like you only have truly for this, you have one opportunity. If you get low bid, you got to be careful with what you're going to be bringing in, because if it's a shitty clinician, if it's somebody that is just not good at their job, these firefighters may do this and they may have an adverse experience, and because of that, it's going to be that much harder from there for them to ever reach out again. So making sure if you're going to do this program, you better have the right person,
And
because
I
you
would
may only get one
actually,
chance.
yeah, and I'd actually recommend, and if you wouldn't be taking me around the city every Friday, I would have stayed with each crew and done ride-alongs. And so I'd recommend, like, if, and I have a whole segment on how to implement a wellness program from the clinician side, but I'd recommend that they stay, have lunch with them, go on ride-alongs. That's the only way they're going to get culturally aware with your department.
That's right. Because now you've worked with a ton of departments. Each department is different, right?
Everyone's different, and all their calls are different, and their population could be more urban or more rural or more older adults, and it just depends, and that changes and shifts then their stress level and what may stress them out versus an inner city like your own.
All right. So if you don't mind, actually talk about your experience, because since you've been with me, you've now, worked with, especially because the state of Ohio had a bunch of ARPA money that they gave to departments for behavioral health. So you've been able now to do these neck up checkups, police departments, fire departments, all throughout Southwest Ohio.
Yeah. So we actually started before you. So in 2018, we started doing neck up checkups through actually an EAP, and that went beautifully. We found that the first year we had done them with a specific department, 0%, zero individuals were using their EAP services. After we did them in the first year, it went to 30%. 30% of the individuals ended up engaging and utilizing their EAP services after the neck up checkup, which is incredible. Like, it's a service that's being paid for, but they didn't know there was competent clinicians. So since then, yeah, we do police departments, fire departments, communication or dispatch divisions as well. And with the grants that we get, we are what I call a hybrid embedded. So we are there a lot, normally at least once to twice a week. We do trainings. We're there for critical incident if they want us. We don't just show up unless they ask, because that's the last thing is like, why is this therapist there? And we're there often. I have a whole team, so I'm not with every department. Some of my teams with a different, with their own departments. Normally, we have like a behavioral health first responder therapist, like a manager with each department. So there's a main point of contact, and that's worked out beautifully. And so with the neck up checkups, again, it's a undivided attention and time that they get with a therapist. They can just come say hi, or they can be there up to an hour. Sometimes some people go a little bit longer, and that's okay. We're not going to tell them to, you got to stop talking. But it's really breaking down the walls. It's incredible to see how welcomed we are now from years ago to now, and how people are ready and willing to start getting help. I was just with a department last week. So I've been doing a lot of third shift and night shift, trying to, meet the demands. And it's not just, public safety is 24 hours a day. And I met with this older gentleman, and it's gonna make me tear up. We did our training. We do a mental health 101 training, and then he came in and he just was saying, I've never had a therapist that understood what we do. And I've gone to so many. And he's like, and I had given up. And he starts crying. He said, telling me things that have happened. And I said, sir, you don't have to tell me all this. He goes, he said, I just, excuse me, I just want to know, can I have your business card? And I was like, absolutely. Do you want to schedule right now? He's like, yes. So, we're making the impact because the most likely time somebody dies by suicide is when they retire. So if we can hit them before that, way before that. And I know Dayton does a great job at starting in the academy. I teach at academies, letting them know now what they may experience, building some resiliency tools so they can do their best that they can to combat what they're going to experience and have support.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool to hear.
Yeah.
And again, you and I were just in Columbus. We were just doing the bridge thing, and during the bridge thing, a big part of that production is Columbus's EAP, Lisa and Rashad. And that is kind of the not the typical what I would consider EAP, and it's a large enough city to where they can have their own, but they are culturally competent. They know the fire side, they know the police side, and those guys and gals there love them. I can't say the same, even though I'm, the city I came from is not a small city. It wasn't Columbus size. So I've been with EAP. Other people have done stuff with EAP, but it's just not the same as like what Columbus has. So I do view, the private practices that specialize in trauma and police and fire and military. Like that is, I mean, you are the perfect alternative. Like we're not big enough to justify having our own, but we could still contract with you and have you do, those annual visits, have you for crisis calls. Those are all options for all these departments.
Yeah.
It's just they actually just need to make this a priority.
If you look at the amount of money that people are spending to retain and cover people when they go off for FMLA, mental health, if they have to take sick leave to go to treatment, if we're again able to quantify that time by having a clinician available and having resources and starting early, then we can reduce that cost in terms of like a township or a city, reduce the cost of the time off. So, I mean, it works. There's data out there saying that this works.
Awesome. Awesome. I know we covered a lot in a short period. I know if you want to know more about like what I did and how I did things, you should look in the December issue of Fire Engineering, the Creating and Enhancing Your Fire Department Wellness Program. So,
You
and
should clip
that's
your hair
also,
when you do
oh, my beard hair. And I think there's going to be my that article is going to be a digital version is going to be available that coincides with this talk that you and I are doing. How
Yeah.
cool is that?
Do you find that there's anything you would have changed? Thinking back, would you have done anything differently?
No, other than me actually be there for the duration. No, I don't think so. I think I had to trust and the ear of my members, and I think they trusted me, and you were an extension of that, and you were able to prove yourself quite early on that you were legit and that you could help people. And I know it made a difference in the members that we did see, and it continued. I mean,
And we still get calls.
you know, it's, I mean, I definitely look, I know things happen with me, and I know it kind of hurt the program and it hurt you as well. And it happened, and it is what it is. And I definitely have regrets, because I always think that I got my, you know, I got pulled out of the game too early, and that I had more to give, and I could have done more. And there's nothing I can do about that now, unfortunately. So it's like doing this show, writing that article, you know, being a peer at the bridge, all these other things that I'm doing now, I still have purpose. I just know that it's different than what it was. And, you know, but I do wish that, I mean, my, you know, full disclosure, my goal truly was to have you come in to do this and be so well received that, you know, you actually became, you know, the city of Dayton's fire and police clinician. You basically, we did have that version like Columbus has. Like that was my goal. And I kind of felt like we were on the way until shit happened, you know.
Maybe we started something and you never know how it's going
I don't know.
to end.
I don't know, but I mean, everything, I wouldn't change anything that was in my control. I thought that the way we went about it was the right way. It was honest. I mean, it was pure. Like it truly, I wanted to help them, and they needed help then, and they certainly need help now.
I would also put two more points, like if somebody is listening to this and really truly wanting to make sure they have a good wellness program, is you had a good peer team. You
Did.
had a really good, I mean, a great peer team of people that it didn't always rely on you, on your shoulders. I know it did a lot of times, but it that makes a huge impact. And so you had people to your right and your left that you could rely on as well. So if you went on vacation, yes, I know you still got calls, but you could ask, hey, let's have this person manage it. And the second piece is you developed great relationships with treatment facilities. And you learned the process to make it streamlined. So when you were with a member in crisis, you knew exactly who to call, you knew what to say, what information you needed from the member before you even got on the call. And so that is another testimony to the work that you did. And I mean, I know even before you stepped in your position, there were people already paving that way. And I think it's really important that we honor them as well because it's hard work.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I still get calls. Just like you get calls, I get calls. People know that against my will, I've become a good resource. And what I mean by that is I've been to the bridge, I've been to Ohio Assist, I've had the Stella ganglion block, I went to Save a Warrior. Spent 40 days at a center of excellence. Like, if you want to know about a facility or procedure, you know, EMDR, whatever, I'm your guy, because I could tell you my personal experiences.
You didn't have to go down the rabbit hole to go to all those places to experience them. You know that, Jim, right? Just kidding. That was the case, right?
I wish, but now, you know, that's the thing. Like, I kind of, you know, AJ's talk this weekend resonated with me. And it was, and his one of
Oh
his big,
no. Oh
huh?
no. It's a
What?
popo.
Oh no, it's a popo. That's right. You know, was one of his big points at the end. It's called the comeback. And it just resonated with me, because I did finally feel like I went through an awful lot of shit. But I'm back. And I feel stronger than I was beforehand, you know, that whole resiliency thing. And it felt good to be full circle, going from an attendee to a peer this weekend. And I mean, it wasn't lost on me. I realized how impactful that was. And And I was happy that I was finally in a place to where I could come back and do this and do it the way I did. So again, I wish nothing more that it was you and me every Friday hanging out and doing this stuff. But that's not in the cards, but you can still do your stuff and I could do what I do, and it's just looks different, but it's still impactful.
We always continue to help and support each other.
Yeah.
And that's a piece with wellness. It's about all of us. You know, it takes literally the village. It takes everyone. And so if somebody's listening or watching this and they're like, yes, we need to start this, how would they get a hold of you or I?
No, I'm supposed to ask that question.
Oh, well, there you go. I asked it for you.
I'm easy. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, OnlyFans. I'm on all that stuff.
Oh, you got an OF now? I didn't know, bro.
Oh yeah, firefighter cancer feet. That's my handle.
You for real? You never
No,
know with you.
I do that. That's like the last slide that I show in my firefighter cancer program, and that gets the best laugh of them all. And I always threaten the classmates, like, don't make me take these shoes off. You're not ready for this.
Oh God, that's disgusting.
Wow, this went sideways really quick,
It
didn't it?
did. It tends to happen that way.
Yeah, no, I'm Jim Bernica Jr. at gmail.com. What are you?
Allison, Alison, at pinpointbhs.com. You can find me on Facebook. I don't discriminate, and I'm more than welcome to help anyone wherever it needs to be. We have an Instagram for Pinpoint. And I believe a Twitter for Pinpoint. Our social media person does that now. But the easiest way is just to find our website, www.pinpointbhs.com, and you can find out more information.
Do you have a MySpace?
It's probably still active somewhere
Okay. Tom is still your friend.
out in outer space. I
Oh.
don't know. I don't know.
That's all
I
good.
appreciate it, Jen.
You're, again, this that's what I'm supposed to say.
Sorry, I
You
should just be the host.
should be the host. No. It's always great hanging out with you. It's always great talking to you. I'm so appreciative to everything we've done together, and I look forward to working some more and doing some things, however that looks like with you. You're always my girl.
Thank you. You as well. And I hope that whoever's listening to this
I'm your
knows
girl.
that, yeah, you're my girl. You're my boy, Blue. But I hope whoever's listening to this knows that this isn't brain surgery to start. If you want to get going, get a good clinician, have him come in, do some ride-alongs. Like, you can help create this culture shift that we're currently in and work on destigmatizing mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much making the time.
Thanks.
Little guys falling asleep in your lap.
He's out.
He's that I well, I don't want to get in your lap, but I think it's time for a nap for me too. So she's Allison and I'm Jim, and I'm going to take a nap. Thank you guys.